1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Katie Annan with you until 3 o'clock today. One-off housing, a huge, huge controversial issue for many people, but a huge issue for many of our listeners. Just to give you an idea of the kind of messages we get in on this, just before we came in, this one came in. The proposed ban on one-off housing is nothing short of a disgrace. Most people who live in the country have no wish and in fact would hate to live in towns and housing estates. Not to allow a young person permission to build their house on their own land, often handed down from parents, is a disgrace. God save us from the Greens. That came in from Laurie just before we came on air. Michael Duffy, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Michael, you're a chartered civil engineer.
That's correct, yeah.
You will have come across many people in that with that view.
I come across a lot of people, Katie, with this problem, yeah.
What's it like out there now? Is there still a lot of people attempting to get permission to build on rural sites?
There are, and there are a lot of them being refused, and I would say wrongly refused. And I think it is going to come to a head shortly. COVID has actually focused the problem, and this whole issue about building in the countryside, you know, really, really needs to be properly addressed, and people need to start talking about it.
How do you mean COVID focused the problem?
Well, my perception is that, you know, during COVID, everybody wanted to get out of cities and towns. And, like, that's obvious. If you're living in even a housing estate or apartments, even worse, with children in a situation like that, you really want to get to the countryside. And, like, we are lucky in the sense that we weren't as badly affected as city people. And we were aware of that, and it was easier to manage COVID in the countryside. But that's only one aspect of it. There's an awful lot more to it than that, you know.
Yeah, because obviously this predates COVID by a long time. I think it's really the last 20 years that this debate has risen about whether or not, you know, one-off housing should be something that should be encouraged or facilitated at all.
Yeah, there is an issue, or there's lots of issues around one-off housing, but, you know, there's other countries are able to deal with it. And, you know, it's probably even longer than 20 years. You know, it's probably going back 40 years now. You had the expression ribbon development and bungalow blitz and all of that. And, like, that's the ugly part of it. And we can't deny that that happened. But, you know, there's lots of creative ways, and particularly architects are, like, that's their purpose, that, you know, they can deal with that. And, you know, planners, county councils, let it be the executive or let it be the elected members of county councils, need to start banging their heads together and resolving this. Like, the big thing I think about it, and it's timely, is internet and broadband. And, you know, most people can consider living in the countryside and working from the countryside if they have broadband. The rest of it is all sort of doable. You know, you can design houses properly, you can design little clusters of houses, you can you can treat wastewater, you can deal with wastewater, and, you know, you could have lovely little clusters. If you go to the likes of Holland or Germany, you'll see little hamlets, and there's no reason why we can't do that and encourage people back into the country. I live in a small little village in North Clare, and our underage football teams are amalgamations, and our under 9 team, for example, they have players from Liscannor and they have players from over near Tubber, nearly into Gort. It's a huge geographical area, and our club need to do that to get numbers on football teams. Now, you know, I come from Dublin. I was born and reared. I played football for Kilmacud Crows. I know what sort of a club that is and what you can do when you have numbers. But, like, small country clubs can't even get a team together. And this is part of the problem, you know, that people are not being allowed. People can work from home. They're happy to do that, but they're not being facilitated with planning.
Okay, well, that's an issue. I think it'll be a big issue for... I've got Sean. You hang on, Michael, because I want to come back to you, but I want to bring in Sean McDermott. Sean, good afternoon.
Katie, thank you very much.
Yeah, Sean, that issue about, you know, trying to, you know, put together a GA team for the village. You know, it mightn't seem like the most important issue, but it's indicative of what's happening on the ground, isn't it?
It is indeed, and your last speaker there, you know, I can sympathise with him, you know, greatly, because in parts of Leitrim, it's taken four teams coming together at underage to put a team out. That's how serious it is. That's what depopulation is doing to our county, and not only Leitrim, but many neighbouring counties as well.
Where are you exactly, Sean? You're a councillor up there, Sean, aren't you?
I happen to be a councillor in Leitrim. I live in North Leitrim, and we're affected very badly there. And, you know, there was a change to the code of practice, Katie, by the EPA in 2010 regarding wastewater treatment and disposal systems for one-off rural house. And that was the death knell for places like Leitrim. Our soil is very poor, and we don't have a fighting chance. And, you know, it's not about having houses willy-nilly all over the place. Because what we still need, you need a core number of people living in your rural areas for survival. And many areas of Leitrim has dropped below that. And we're not taking a series. There's people that know best and are planning our future. And they're planning a future without people in the rural areas. Where's the sense of that? And the last speaker has referred to, you know, the knockdown and people want to work from home and broadband improving. So we have the opportunity. Now, when I was young, Katie, you couldn't pay people to live. I was living in school in the 70s. People were flying away. There was nothing to hold them there in the areas. That has changed. People want to stay and people want to come back. But we're not facilitating them. And there's something wrong there with the future. And I think, Katie, this problem is only starting if it's not tackled. And I tell you why. We have climate change and protecting the environment, and we're all into that, and we want to make sure that happens. But the low-hanging fruit, which is the rural areas, I think will be affected greatly in the future.
But is there anybody, I mean, when you say people, excuse me, the people want to live there, I mean, are there people building houses in your area now, Sean?
I'll give you a statistic in my parish. Not a house has been built since 2016. So
house at all has been built in your parish. What parish is that?
Sorry, I'm a parish of Glenfarne, which is North Leitrim. We're not very far away from the border.
Sean, I cut across you there. Since when?
Sorry?
Since when has there no house been built?
No house built in the parish since 2016.
Right.
So our parish won't survive. And like the people that are planning our future must know that, like. They want people in towns and villages, and they want to forget about the rural areas. And I tell you, Katie, what happened in our parish. At the time of the last general election, around that time, our development group decided at our last meeting before the knockdown that we would call in the relevant minister when the election result was over and a government being formed. And we wanted to take them down to the Ballin River Manse in Glenfarne and point out to them and show them what depopulation is doing to our area. Unfortunately, that didn't happen because of the knockdown, but I hope that can happen. And I have talked to ministers, and Peter Burke we had a Zoom meeting there recently with councillors and council officials. And I think that Peter went away very clear with our problem. But when you go back to the cold face, Katie, the cold face to me is government officials, civil servants, and the EPA. They have their own take on it, and they don't realise what is happening down in the rural area.
Is it a fact, though, that people... Because obviously there is this, you know, it's not rocket science to know that if you bunch houses together that, you know, services and facilities will be more efficient and easier to manage for those. But is there an issue that rural people, if you grew up in out the country on a farm or, you know, out the country, out from a town, that people just don't want that? The idea of living in a housing estate or in a town just has no appeal for those people.
Katie, I'd say that's part of it. But lots of people that have left the area want to come back and want to rear their family. And the schools are smaller schools in the rural areas. And, you know, people like to have their children maybe in smaller schools. And, you know, the schools would close if we don't do something about it. I think that we are a crisis. And I've been crying out. And even all councillors in Leitrim County Council, party councillors and no party, that we're all singing from the one hymn sheet. We know we're dying in the rural areas. And
are you saying, Sean, that the planners in Leitrim are, you know, curtailed by these national guidelines, and that they're just simply not giving planning permission?
But the guidelines were set up in 2010, the new guidelines from the EPA. And whoever put that document together knew what was going to happen in counties like Leitrim, because there was no way that we were going to reach that standard.
But I still see one-off housing going on around the countryside, though. So how is that happening?
There isn't in some counties it seems to be that, and I have to be fair and say that some counties seem to be getting it easier to get planning permission than our own county in Leitrim. And I'm not too proud of that, to be quite honest, because we're the county with the smallest population, Katie. And yet we're making it hard to get young people to want to build their homes. Like, I can tell you, prior to 2010, our population in my rural community started to stabilise, the school numbers started to stabilise, and there was a good feel factor, Katie. That's taken away from us now, and we're waiting there and knowing what's going to happen. And it's the one thing that, as a councillor, and I work very closely in my own community group. I'm chairperson of my own development group in my own area for over 20 years. And this kills me to see what's happening, you know?
Yeah, okay. Well, you stay there, Sean. I want to bring in John on another line. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. I'll tell you, the reason I'm ringing up is because from next March 2022, unless your income is a full-time farming, you will not get planning. Any young fellas that are on farms or anything like that. So I can see where they're coming from, because we have nearly too many houses, one-off houses in areas. Like a farmer's son, in fairness, if he's the only fella there, should get planning.
Okay, where are you calling from, John?
I'm calling from near Kinvara in County Galway.
Right. Now, County Galway would have had, I'd say, more than its fair share of one-off housing over the years.
Oh, they have a lot, but it depends on who you know in Galway County, in Galway County, because I know some fellas that have 12 and 14 houses got planning for, and I know fellas that have just one son and can get it planning. Like, I couldn't get planning myself there in 08. I was looking for planning because my house was flooding.
Right.
And after 15 years looking for it, I got it. And after I getting it, the NRA didn't object to me coming out onto the roadway. Even when coming out there, we're coming out there with nearly 400 bloody years. And I can come out with a pair of Wellingtons, but I can't come out with a pair of low shoes. You know that kind of way.
Right, yeah. And did you manage to build?
Oh, I didn't, but I ran the house at the back. That's all I could do. But you could put up, at my age now, I feel like that if I wanted to build, I'd be too long on the tooth for it. But if I wanted to build, I don't, provided I wasn't doing any harm to anybody, I wouldn't bother at all with the planners. God forgive me for saying that.
But because the planners might bother with you, John. I mean,
pardon?
The planners might bother with you, though. You know,
But sure, look, you can always get retention and all that. There's a lot of tricks and trade and the thing. Not alone that, then, when I talk about farming, right, we say young fella applies for planning. And he's refused the planning.
Yeah.
Because he might have a job of a couple of hundred euros a week. But we say an industrialist in from anywhere in part of the world, or a fellow that has no connection at all with agriculture, can come in and buy that farm for peanuts. He's allowed to buy the land. Whereas if that was back in 1977, when the Land Commission wouldn't allow that, because unless you were involved in agriculture, you could only buy agricultural land. And if you had only 7 or 8 acres, you couldn't buy any land. You had to have more than 22 acres.
Sorry, go back to the start of that, though. You're saying that the new regulation will say that if you have an off-farm income of a certain amount, that
correct.
Will disqualify you from getting planning permission to build a house on that farm.
Correct, correct.
And is that going to be a cast iron?
Well, according to what I was reading there, and I don't know what part of the thing it was, it was one that the councillors brought it out, that from March of 2022, you have, unless you're a full-time farmer, no other income, you're not entitled to planning.
Right, okay. I'll just put that to Michael Duffy. We still have Michael Duffy on the line. Hi,
yes,
Michael.
Katie, yeah.
Yeah, is that coming down the tracks?
Well, no, not that I'm aware of, but if I could explain the process to you, you've hit on probably four of the most fundamental issues in what you're talking about today. First of all, every county must have a county development plan and must review it every 6 years, okay? Now, somebody mentioned about guidelines coming down from above. They don't really. There's national planning policy, and then there's regional planning policy. But in each individual county, they have to have a development plan, okay?
Yeah.
And that's reviewed every 6 years. And in Clare now, our one is being reviewed at the moment, and there'll be public participation in August that every member of the public in Clare can write in and make their submissions on these things. And that's fundamental to changing the planning law. Now, when a planning application goes in any county, The first thing the planner has to do is to reach for the development plan, because that's the gospel to the planner. And that is an instruction from the county, from the elected members, how planning issues are to be dealt with in that county. Now, the one-off housing thing, in most counties, they look at the county and they break it down into areas. And you can visualise, your own home county would be very much in this category. There would be areas of the West Coast where people would love to come and build a house. And people that might be working in Limerick or working in Ennis or working in Tralee, and they'd have good jobs. Two of them may be professionals. They could go out and they could build a house in the countryside and spend $500,000-$600,000 doing so. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that there's a lot of those people. And the development plan recognises that, and it says that there are areas that are under urban pressure in a county. And they highlight those areas.
So this is, under urban pressure is people... urban people, basically urban generated people, basically coming out to want to build in rural, scenic rural places, basically.
Yes, and that in fact can sometimes include people that would be otherwise known as local rural people. You know, people that have gone to college, you know, somebody leaves North Clare, they go to college, they become a school teacher, they go into Limerick, or working as a lecturer or a teacher in Limerick, and then when things, you know, after they establish themselves and that, they like to build a house back in the farm at home. Now, that, in planning terms, is a problem. And I can see, to a certain extent, why that might be a problem, particularly if
even,
the
even though they're there, they're from there originally.
You know, that's part of the debate we need to have. But I suppose, like, you know, in terms of in fairness to both sides, and I'm completely in the middle in this. I want both sides talking on this. But, like, the Green people will tell you that you shouldn't be commuting from Fionnuala to university in Limerick lecturing, you know, and whether you should or whether you shouldn't, you know, it needs to be discussed.
Yes. Now, and not just the Green people now, to be fair. I mean, this is...
No, we're nearly all Green now, and that's the funny thing about it. Even the people that are arguing about this, you know, they're predominantly, you know, they don't want them, and particularly farming people. I'm not from a farm, but I understand farming people, and the last thing they want to do is to damage their environment. But, no, the issue there is that the County Development Plan decides who can apply. And in our county here in Clare, it's typical. But you have this local rural person, and there's three criteria for the local rural person, okay? Mm-hmm. And one of them is that you can establish that you were born within 10 kilometres of the site and reared within 10 kilometres of the site. The second category is then for people who can demonstrate to the planning authority that they have... that they're embedded in the local area. So in other words, you know, a guard, a teacher, a vet, you know, a forester, whatever. You know, if they've established their family locally, children going to school, playing football, whatever it is, swimming club, whatever it is, they can apply for building in a local rural, in a local area.
Yeah.
And the third category then is if you can establish that there's a need, in the sense that if you're coming home to mind elderly parents, there is supposed to be an allowance for that. I don't often see it, but it's in the development plan.
Right, now, but if I am, as you say, somebody who maybe used to work in Limerick or Dublin, now with you know, post COVID, have realised I can now work from home. I've got a good internet connection down in the old farm where I came from. The fact that I came from there originally doesn't qualify me under the current development plan.
Each county development plan is
in Clare,
but I would say, Katie, if you said that to the people of Kerry, they'd love to hear that, and they'd love to welcome you back working from home.
Okay.
The next issue then is the wastewater issue, and the councillor man, it was Sean, I think, from Leitrim, hit on this. Okay.
Yeah.
The EPA code of practice. If you open the inside front cover of it, there's a disclaimer in it. It is guidance. It is not law. And it's a document that is a very good document. 75-80% of it is 100% spot on. There's parts of it that are wrong. And even in the code of practice...
What parts of it are wrong?
There's actually design details in it that were incorrect when it was published and when it was brought out in 2009.
Right, okay.
And they have tried to make corrections to it, and they've varied it a little bit since. But the bottom line of it is, Katie, It's not the same. If I'm an engineer, and if I have to design a beam in your, if you have a kitchen dining room and I need to put a beam in to carry the room above, okay? Yeah. I designed that to a European norm, okay? And if I carry out the practices set down in that, it's like it used to be a British standard, it's now a European norm, okay? Mm-hmm. But if I tick all the boxes, let it be a steel beam or a concrete beam, and if I tick all the boxes in that, okay, and I sign off on it, and God forbid that beam falls down. It could fall down on a child in a pram or whatever. But when it goes to the High Court or wherever it goes after that, if I can demonstrate that I have designed that beam in accordance with the code of practice, I'm vilified.
Yeah, you're covered.
Now, that's not the case with the EPA code of practice. It is a guideline. It is guidance.
Okay, but and obviously some development plans stick with it more closely than others.
Well, you see, you're into a difficulty there. I had an occasion once to stand in front of...
Can I get you to hold that thought, Mike? Because I just want to bring in somebody else on this because they're actually, I understand, building one-off houses for a living. John Moylan, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. Hiya. Yes, thanks for having me on. A very emotive subject for people generally, but also from our perspective, we're a company in the West of Ireland who make houses, and a great number of them are for rural one-offs. And I made a couple of points in an email, which is why I'm here. But can I just pick up one comment your last contributor made about people and anchored in the community and, you know, being within 10 kilometres of where you were born and all this kind of stuff, and the possibility that they will be ineligible to build. That's a really annoying point for me, and I'll tell you one why, and this is outside of my professional interest in it, just as an Irish citizen. European freedom of movement of people guarantees people to move freely throughout the European Union, and that includes people in this county and in this country to move from one part to another. And they shouldn't be dictated by local regulations that are in breach of EU legislation. Now, this has already been tested through the courts, in particular with the County Council in the North West. And that criterion for the local needs requirement is actually in breach of European law. And it shouldn't be entertained by anybody. And any councillor or
but
TD
this hasn't been,
to me.
Yeah, sorry, John. I understood that it had been tested in relation to some regulations, similar regulations in Finland, I think.
Well, I can give you a working example. We had a client who was Polish, and her husband was Polish, and they would have been unable to build, right, no matter what anchors and what roots they put down in the community by dint of their birth, right, and that's wrong. Now I'll go back, sorry for digressing. Mm. The point I made in the email into you while I was listening to you was every person that builds rurally a one-off house is a person providing for themselves and ultimately their family. And ergo, they are not putting pressure on the state to provide anything to them. And they should actually be congratulated and nearly put on a pedestal for making that effort and being able to do so.
But what about the environmental impact?
Well, there's two sides of every environmental impact. If you tell, let's say for the sake of argument, there are 10,000 one-off houses that would be built in Ireland next year, and we've decided for whatever reason they can't be, where are you going to put those 10,000 people? You're going to create an environmental nightmare or an environmental issue around villages, towns and cities, including transport and commuting. So you're only supplanting one evil with another, to put it simply. You're not actually sorting the problem. So this thing about it being greener, you know, to not build rural. I'll give you the classic example. You know, they called it bungalow blight, where they didn't want strings of bungalows and houses built along country roads. You know, they wanted them built in hamlets. County councils have fought tooth and nail to prevent people building in hamlets for the last 40 years. They wouldn't allow what's called backland development, where people would build behind one another. You go to the UK, you go to Europe, and you see that happens all the time. But no, here they had for many years dictated you must have X amount of road frontage. You must have X amount of ground space to build on. So guess what? When you do that, when you're that prescriptive, you end up with bungalow blight. So bungalow blight is actually a direct result of poor planning policy rather than being creative.
Right. Now, can I bring... Can, yeah, go on.
You can. I won't delay too long. And all, the other thing I would just say from a commercial point of view, everybody that does not live in a city and lives in a rural environment contributes to the economy of that. We here have over 30 people involved in this business directly in housing. And so we have employees, we have people, we are tied to the town, we are tied to the schools. And that is a positive, not a negative. And finally, those people that are able to build one-off houses, by whatever manner they are able to do so, they don't do it for free. Not only do they pay the likes of us and builders generally, they pay planning fees, development fees, contributions. They provide their own services, their own water, their own electricity, their own bin collections. And they pay more for their electricity by being in the rural community, not less. And all of those things are being conveniently poured out with the bath water here. And it's something that really, really riles me.
Okay, no, stay there, John. Because I want to put that to John, our other John in Galway. John, good afternoon again.
Yeah,
because you were saying your issue was you think that there is actually too much one-off housing, but that when it comes to farmers...
There are, you know, because I'll tell you why. It's okay, but at the end of the day, you're talking about sewerage and wastewater. I mean, that is, when I was a child, I used to go down with cows down to the stream, and we used to take water for the tea. The cows would be drinking one side, and we'd be drinking blood the other side. That day is gone for the last 20 years, and it's all down to septic tanks and wastewater and all this kind of stuff. I mean, to say, if you were to go around the country and see houses everywhere, I don't like that.
Well, hold on a minute. Seeing as you just mentioned it, apologies, that contribution to maybe fouling of water streams and everything, I totally agree with you. I'd be all for protecting them. I have a well myself. It's 90 metres down in the ground. And I have it tested. I have it filtered. I have it UV treated. And I have it tested. So I know the quality of the water. But you have to bear in mind, it isn't the one-off housing that is affecting all those streams. Agriculture. And I'm in a rural community, has a huge part to that. You can't blame the people in one-off houses.
I agree with you on that line.
The cows that you just described walking down to the water's edge, that's actually part of the cause, not the people living in the house a half a mile away.
Yes, yeah, but we had only two cows. Where there could be 300 cows now inside in concrete, standing up all day by dairying. And I mean to say, you'll see them there. I have only 500 cows. I hope to double it in 2 years' time. That's an incentive, to pollute the bloody whole area.
That has nothing to do with one-off housing. That's a complete red herring. That's a separate issue.
Well, most of the one-off housing, then you see when they come out the countryside, they think that we get a smell of slurry and there's this happening and there's that happening.
Yeah.
And when they come out the country, they'll have to accept that as well.
Correct.
You know, they're not doing
that.
And I see them here on the roads and the tractor, they hardly stand tripping everywhere. I don't know, they're lucky enough. Like, the roads are narrow this time of the year. And people, if they're on a bike rant, they won't even pull into a gateway. They stay coming all the time. So, the farmers, we're here all the time. Before this IT came into the country, we depended solely on agriculture. In the 40s, it was compulsory to sow stuff. And I'll tell you something. Our next war will be about water, and it'll be about famine. And that's only coming. Like, we aren't even 200 years from 1847. You know, so we've taken everything for granted. I've taken it all for granted. We know it all, and we want everything, and we want it for nothing. Like, I mean to say, houses can be built.
There's nobody building one-off houses for nothing. The people who build them, whether they're doing it self-built or they're using contractors, are putting their hard-earned money into it, and
they're putting their time and effort, and
they should be congratulated.
Sorry, no, I didn't interrupt you. You've got planners, you've got engineers, and the whole lot, and that's all a big cost. And really and truly, it's like health and safety. It's common sense. You know what I mean? At the end of the day. So that's all I have to say.
There's no logic there.
I love to see people that are dependent on a house in the country, like a son or a daughter that wants to build, that are involved in the land. But
why are you discriminating? If somebody is living in the country and their children are born and reared and in a position or of an age to build a house, why does the occupation of their parents have anything to do with their right to build a house?
Well, it depends on the area. The area would not be suitable. That's where we're going back again. I mean to say, if you had houses along the road and every part of the country, what about There's no sewerage. There's no main sewerage.
Correct.
There's loads of parts of the country all the time, in county, even Mayo, anywhere, where there's main sewerage and there's no houses at all built in it. I mean to say, right. If you're talking about planning, I mean to say, the planners really have a lot to be desired, you know. They've a lot to be desired.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Okay, we'll take a break.
Okay.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
And we're talking about one-off rural housing, and go to Rachel now. Good afternoon, Rachel.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, Rachel, you have an issue with planning regulations.
Yeah, well, basically, I'm lucky enough that my parents have a bit of land. Now, with rents as high as they are, I haven't been able to afford to rent anywhere, so I've been living at home. And what we thought of, kind of giving myself a bit of independence, is to save up. We hope to put a mobile home on the land. So we did that last year. I bought a mobile home. I put it on our own land and I did it up. I renovated the whole thing. And next thing I know, I get a letter to say, from the council, to say that I had an unauthorised structure. Now, I didn't realise you needed planning permission to put a mobile home on your own land, because it's only a temporary structure and there's loads of them around the area. So we had to go and get the plan permission done, get the plans drawn up, and we were refused permission for the mobile based on sustainable development of the area. So
what kind of an area are we talking about? That's a Midlands accent I hear, Rachel. Is it?
Yeah, I'm in Leith. Like, it's in the middle of nowhere. There's a couple of houses around us, and a few fields, but it's a rural area. Like,
right. And would this have been visible from the road where you had the mobile home?
Barely. It was down the end of the field, in behind the sheds that we have. There's one gap kind of in the hedging that you see it, but that's about it.
Right. And you don't know, somebody must have alerted the council.
We didn't know at the time that we needed plan permission, because, like I said, there's loads of them in the area. So we just thought, because it was only temporary, it was only going to be for a few years, that we could put it up. But no, it turns out no.
And is there any chance of, you know, appealing your ruling on it?
Yeah, I tried that. I went through all the sustainable development documents I could find online, and I read up on it. I had a big, about 30 page document I sent off to Board Planála to say why I'd like to appeal the decision, and they came back just last week and said no, can't have it. So,
so what are you going to have to do?
I don't know. At the moment, like, my parents' house is small. It's only a 2-bedroom, and I live with my partner. And the 2 bedrooms are being used, so we're going to have to try and move into the parents' house for a while and try and find somewhere to rent. But, I mean, after the news yesterday, like, rents are 25 to 50% of what your income is, and I'm a substitute teacher, so I'm not earning constantly. So at the moment, I'm a bit of a quandary, because I'll kind of be homeless in the next few weeks. Like.
And are you teaching in Leash, that down there, yeah?
I do, yeah. Well, I had to go back to college, so I wasn't working for 2 years, but I've recently gotten back into it. But, I mean, teaching is the kind of profession, I mean, a permanent job is like gold, so there's no way I'll get a mortgage. So I was hoping to save to rent somewhere, but that's just not going to happen now.
God, and are you going to have to take that? Are you going to have to move that mobile home?
I spent all my savings that I had, what little savings I did have, I put into the mobile home to do it up so that it was comfortable to live in, because it was, when I got it, the floor was rotten, the walls were damp. I put radiators and everything into it, and now I have to try and sell it and move it in the next 2-3 months.
Oh God, that is, that's a very disappointing situation to find yourself in. And would you longer term have thought about maybe building on your parents' land there?
That was the hope, was to maybe extend the house or to buy somewhere, a piece of land nearby, to build on. But, I mean, I need to be able to save the money to do that if I'm going to do it. Whereas if I'm out trying to rent somewhere, like a 2-bed apartment for €1,000 a month, I mean, it's just crazy. I wouldn't even pay that on a mortgage.
Yeah, and is that the sort of prices now, or the sort of costs now that in Leash, in your area?
Yeah. I mean, the cheapest I've seen is €950 for a month in a small one-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, it's just so tough out there. Like, how people manage to keep food on the table with those kind of rental costs.
What's crazy to me is that you can put a mobile, if you put a mobile home in, if it's there for 7 years, they can't do anything about it, and the council won't do anything about it unless someone says something. So the fact that we went the right way when we found out we were wrong, we went and we did the planning permission, we went about it the right way, and we were refused. Yet there's 10 mobile homes near me that didn't even apply for planning permission, and they're still there because nobody has said anything.
Right, okay, Rachel, my heart goes out to you. That is a very, very difficult situation you're in there. Yeah. And as I say, you did your best to try and put some solution in place.
Yeah.
But, and was there an issue with wastewater or, you know, was that...
No.
No?
No, it was just that they said that it didn't go with the views. It didn't suit the views. Now, like I said, there's a gap in the hedging that you can see it in on part of the land. But I mean, there's agricultural sheds all over the place. There's a mobile home in someone's front garden in the local village, you know. So I don't know how it doesn't fit in with the views around the place when there are other mobile homes there.
Yeah. Maybe Alec or Alec Quinn. Good afternoon.
Hiya. Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you're a retired architect, so you'd be familiar with planning regulations.
I've forgotten most of it now, and a lot of things have changed. But just as you're mentioning the septic tanks there, quite a number of years ago, we changed our whole kind of supervisory system in local authority to self-regulation. So there's no real inspections going on anymore with regard to construction. And septic tanks would be one thing that should. There's heaps of septic tanks around the country which wouldn't comply with the EPA. And a lot of that would be down to the fact that people didn't bother because nobody was checking it. So there's a problem there. But the planning in general can be very personal. I've come across where I was told by a planner, well, the house, I live the other side of the lake and I don't really want to be looking over at a house over there.
What, the person who was going to be making the decision?
Yes. Which is nothing to what to do ever to do with planning. And what sparked me off there was the I sent in a copy of a comment from the journal where somebody this same topic came up, and he said he was told by a planner that that it reminded them of something from their childhood which gave them the horrors, and therefore they weren't going to allow him to build whatever it was. Which is very limited view.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that the people making these decisions have a bit of leeway, and sometimes they can be made for personal reasons.
Well, personal opinion, not so much personal. Well, personal reason in one case, yeah. Personal opinion would be the other. The other aspect of some of the conditions of planning, where they remove ditches, maybe in a case where the local authority required to build a stone wall, like a natural stone wall, which is kind of, I feel, is rather penal. As some of the other contributors said, you know, people are out there pinning the collar trying to get money together to build a house, and yet they're expected to build this stone wall. And sometimes they're asked to put stone into the building as well, in part of the building, which sometimes doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, that they do. I mean, to be fair to the planners, you know, they and some people would say they have great relationships with planners and that they work with them. But you know, they have regulations as well that they have to, you know, boxes that have to be ticked.
Absolutely. I'm not knocking all planners, but I'm just saying it's a couple of instances there of problems that come up with planning when you try to... I mean, my case, I was in discussing the particular development. It was just a one-off house, and I went in to kind of talk about it and say, look, are we on the right track here? Are we all kind of going the same way? And that was the response I get, that I don't want to be looking across the lake at that, which was...
I presume you complained about that, Alec.
I didn't. Well, see, the problem, if you start complaining, then you're going to get the wrong side of the whole system, and then nobody will talk to you. I wasn't doing a lot of work anyway, so it didn't. You know, I wouldn't be overly involved in the whole thing. I didn't want to get caught up in something.
And did that development, that house, get permission ultimately?
No. Again, partly it came down to residency.
This issue of ties to the community.
Yeah,
that is a huge issue for people, I think, you know, and particularly for people who may have had ties, you know, may have grown up in a community and moved away and then trying to re-establish those ties again.
But communities are dying. I mean, there's a case actually in Clare, the man was talking about Clare there earlier on, where they can't get a GP because it seems it's not sustainable. There's not enough people around the area to sustain a GP. One of the villages in East Clare, I think it is.
Yeah, and as I say, the great white hope now, the great hope is that this, you know, in a post-COVID world, more people will be able to work from home, and that might rejuvenate rural communities, but they have to have somewhere to live.
Yeah, well, the other thing on a personal on my part, that some of the county councils are looking for what they call traditional looking houses. So when are we going to move forward and build modern houses? You know, are we going to be, you know, building traditional old looking houses all over the country? I mean, that's totally nonsensical altogether.
Yeah, that this is a part of would be a guideline or a provision that you'd have to meet if you were going to
build. Guidelines, and they'd expect you to fall in with the guidelines to build what are called country looking houses, rural looking houses, which you know. To me, I don't know. As I say, when are we going to move forward? You know.
When is it okay to build a modern looking house?
Yeah, there's quite a few of them around the country now. I know I passed in one area, which I can't remember now. I was kind of a run around, but there's quite a number of modern houses, which I was kind of surprised to see. You know that planning that particular area had been enlightened and not looked for traditional housing.
Okay, Alec, thank you for that. I'm going to have to take another break. We'll come back with more on this after these.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
I want to go now to Tim Cotter. Tim, good afternoon. Do we have Tim? Oh, Tim, we'll try and get Tim again. I'm going to go to Louise then. Louise, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm very well. And, I mean, we've been talking to a lot of people from the country. You're saying it's not just an issue down the country.
That's it. I'm listening to the programme and I understand that it is an issue in rural areas, but we're actually in Dublin and we find ourselves in the same position. We have a house. I'm in my home place, which is in the family for over 100 years. And we have a large site at the rear of our house. And my daughter, who's 29, and her boyfriend were struggling to save to get a deposit for a house because it would cost them a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
So we offered some assistance and said, look, if you can get planning, we're happy that you can build a house here. So we engaged an architect and, you know, they were given a clear indication that the cost to build a house would be a lot less than what it would cost them to buy in the area to where they want to buy. So we went ahead and we actually got planning permission for a semi-detached house on the site.
Right.
So we decided then that we would put in an amendment so as the house could be moved to the larger site. And we got word from the council that the planning permission was refused on the grounds that we were zoned EE, which is enterprise and employment. But they had granted for the one that's on the very same site, but we were told that the planning permission for the detached was zoned EE, even though it's still within the same site.
And even though you're living there, so...
I'm living there on life, as was my father.
What part of Dublin are we talking about, Louise?
We're just at Clondalkin, quite near the Green Isle Hotel.
Right. And is it a mix there? Yeah, there is a mix there, isn't there, actually?
There's a hotel and then there's some residential and then there is residential and a small business park beside us. But we were never aware that we had been rezoned to EE. At no point were we informed of that. And even though the three houses that are there are occupied.
Yeah, but
So are you saying that even though, when did the rezoning come in? Was it between the getting the planning permission for the first house?
No. We only got the planning permission for the first house last year. And then we made the amendment and we were told that that planning was actually granted in error, that we were zoned EE and that we couldn't be granted the second planning, even though it would only have been one house.
Okay, and where do you stand with the first planning permission then?
And we're sort of, the architect was quite concerned that if we actually put in an appeal to onboard Planola, that we might lose the first application.
Right, so as far as you're concerned, the first application is still standing. You can build on that. Yeah.
We could build a semi-detached there, which would mean the house would be attached to our own house, the family home. But I mean, the space is out. The space is at the rear of the house. There's absolutely no issue with space. But like the fact that one had been granted on the same site, and then we're told that that was actually granted in error because the site is zoned EE, it just doesn't make sense.
Right, but as you say, you're afraid now to say boo about the first one.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So what do you think? Do you think you'll go ahead and you build? It's very
hard on them because the house that they got planning for would be actually a lot smaller. Now, it's not that the second house is going to be a mansion or anything like it, but it would be quite small, the house that they have planning permission for.
Yeah.
And it's not affecting anybody. Like, we're detached. It's affecting nobody.
Yeah, I think if we could be here all day, we'll hear another 100,000.
It's all very interesting. Yeah.
It's just very interesting. Everyone has their own story, but it's very frustrating for people. I can hear it. Yeah,
it is when you're trying to, you know, you're trying to help people to get their foot onto the first step of the ladder, but to no avail, and they just would never be able to afford a house quite close to us. And it all comes down to money. Like to buy a house, they're going to need a 100,000 deposit, which, you know, takes quite an amount of saving on that. But it would appear, in light of the housing crisis and not enough demand, or not enough supply, you know, you're trying to help them out and it's just not possible.
I know. Yeah, when you put that up against the kind of crisis we're in and you hear those kind of stories, it really does break your heart, doesn't it?
It does. It does. It's heartbreaking. As I said, you're trying to help them some little bit, but obviously, for whatever reason, and as I said, the big issue to us is if one was granted on the same site and we're told that the site is now zoned EE, so we can't have permission that the first one was actually granted in error, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Thank you for that, Louise. Yeah. Best of luck to you and to your daughter. And hopefully we'll find a way through that one. I go to Leon now. Leon, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
You're down in Kerry.
I am. Yeah, I'm down just outside Dingle.
Beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, gorgeous here, yeah.
I'd love to be there right now, Leon. But you did eventually get planning.
We did eventually, yeah. So it took us 5 years to get planning in the end. So I suppose our background story is we're both from here. And we were living in Cork and we had one baby. And then we said, you know what, it'd be lovely to move home and be around family. Both his parents and my parents both live here. And Micheál's family have a farm here. And Micheál's father had the planning authorities out and had given Micheál a site based on their advice. Probably like a few years before we even thought about moving home. Just when he was dividing up the family land. And so we came home thinking, oh God, there'll be no problem with planning. built a house, you know, that would kind of sit in with the landscape. And there was somebody on earlier there, an architect, talking about traditional housing. And we kind of went down that route just so that it would be easier to get planning. But we were refused. And they told us that we were too obscure on the landscape in the site that we were in, even though they had initially recommended that site. And we had no other land, so the site was quite wide. So we reapplied again and moved where the house was on the site because they had told us if we were a bit closer in to the other houses, in like it's where the house where we were applying for planning, there are a lot of houses around us, so we thought there wouldn't be any issue, you know. Then we reapplied and we went for a pre-planning meeting. The second time we attended it ourselves, the planner kind of gave no indication that there would be an issue with the site the second time round. We thought we would build whatever they wanted us to build that would fit in with the landscape. So we designed a house that would kind of fit in with the, I would say, the buildings around us, which are like a lot of agricultural sheds. And then we, you know, we tried to fit in with that. And again, we were told on the second refusal that we were again too obtrusive on the landscape. And when you look at the planning documentation that Kerry County Council have, it's very, the main paragraph they have is that in areas like Dingle and that, they mention tourists an awful lot and they don't really mention the local people. So that really, we had an issue with that, obviously. I mean, you can't have a community that's based on tourists coming here 3 or 4 months of the year. You know, you need a community for 12 months of the year.
Absolutely. And where you where you were trying to build, was it just kind of a scenic part of...
No, so this is the thing. Like, my own parents, my own family home is right on Slay Head. I mean, we never even considered applying there because we said, God, obviously you would never get planning permission there. Like, where we were applying is, like, there's a road off the main road, there's another road off that, and then there's another road off that again. That's where we're applying. So that's how far off the main road we're applying. Nice. So I suppose it just took us by surprise when we were refused. So then we said we'd go to the On Board Plan Ála. So when we went to On Board Plan Ála, even though we're both from the area, we have three small children, we have no other property in the area. I work as a pharmacist in the local pharmacy, which is only about 3 kilometres from the house. And my husband works for, he works up in town as well for Uderos na Gaeltachta. And we're also raising our kids through Irish. Which
okay, so you're the perfect family, basically, for...
yeah. And our refusal from On Board Plan Ála stated that we proved no social or economic need for housing in the area. I mean...
Oh my God, that is, that is just crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And I'm so sorry, I'm getting a bit emotional now. It was very upsetting for us and upsetting for all families. I suppose Micheál's father felt he had gone to the trouble of getting the planner out, showing them, you know, his land. And then when he was dividing off the land, like where it would be suitable for sites, he was given advice of another area, but that actually floods. So he said, well, I can't give them land there because that floods. So the second place they advised was where we had our land, and yet they refused us twice. And then On Board Plan Ála refused us on the grounds that we had no social or economic need for housing in the area.
So how did you eventually get your planning?
So through a lot of financial losses, I have to say. So we went back to the council again, and we actually ended up having to go to one of the councillors. We felt the planners were very slow to kind of, to talk with you or to discuss things. Like, I felt it was very non-transparent, the whole process, and which was very difficult for us, seeing as we were happy to build whatever they wanted. If they had said you have to build a two-bedroom house, now maybe not a two-bedroom house, but we were willing to do whatever they wanted. So in the end, what we had to do was they gave us, the council then, or the councillor spoke to the planner and she picked a place on the site that she said, or on, we'll say, Micheál's, which is now Micheál's brother's land, that she would grant planning. Now, obviously, we had to pay solicitors, we had to pay tax on all of this because the land had to be exchanged. But like the problem then was, I mean, Micheál's brother was very good to agree to this because it's actually right in front of his sheds. If he ever wants to expand the farm, we're now in his way. And there was also the issue of safety for us. Like we said, we have 3 small children. Like, you want us to build right in front of sheds where there are cattle and
animals. Farm machinery and all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that's in the end, that's where we have built because we can't afford to buy here. It's a beautiful place and everybody wants to live here. So, you know, in that regard, there's a lot of people looking to buy here. So house prices are extremely high in the area. Yeah, I mean, we are very lucky. We did eventually get planning, but it has had huge financial implications for us, because I'm sure anyone who's building now knows that the cost of building has gone up so much that, I mean, we're talking about not quite double, but close enough to double what it would have cost us to build 4 or 5 years ago if we had been granted the plan.
Really? So, is that the difference?
Yeah, you're talking at least 30%. At least 30%.
That is a shocking story, I have to say, Leon. That is a shocking story, in particular that... that result you got back, or that ruling you got back from a board Planola, I'm sure, and I could hear it in your voice, obviously, it still sticks in your craw.
It does, and I mean, we are very lucky, and I do realise we did eventually get planning, but I mean, I think when somebody has land and they're happy to build whatever it takes to sit in with the area, and I do agree there has to be planning laws. You can't build whatever you want, wherever you want. I mean, we both, my husband and I, completely agree with that. We went to huge pains to build something. Like, we've paid architects to design houses that would fit in with the area, and we were still just completely refused.
Yeah.
And I think to prioritise tourists over the local people in the area is just, it's quite shocking, actually. And I can't believe it's even written in their planning guidelines that, you know, that, you know,
for it to
take a priority.
Yeah. Leanne, listen, best of luck with it. You have,
thanks,
as you
really
say, you are lucky. You're going to be,
we are,
have your house
yeah.
in one of the most beautiful parts of the country. But it was hard won. We're going to have to take a break there. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And I want to bring in Rob now. Rob, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you're a developer, Rob, are you?
Yeah, I'm building my own home at the same time, so I'm experiencing pain on both sides.
And is it pain, yeah?
It's horrific. I really feel sorry. I think when you look at it, Katie, there's currently about 450,000 young people living at home with mum and dad, and they are not going to be getting homes in the next 10 years because of the lack of supply and the lack of connectivity. Just across the whole of Ireland, like the numbers being touted of 35,000 homes being built, that they're nowhere near what needs to be built when you've got nearly 500,000 young people living at home. And I've experienced it on both sides, on the professional side and personally, having lived away for 13 years, moved back to the community, wanting to bring the kids up in their local schools out in the countryside. It's 3 years. We're really worried that it's become the March changes. We won't get planning. We're looking at modular new builds, sustainable home, zero carbon, and that in itself challenges planners.
And have you got land that you want to build on?
We've bought land, subject to planning.
And you've bought land subject to planning, and this is in an area that you grew up in yourself?
Yeah, I'm from the community.
Where is this, school, Rob?
Out in Dungarvan.
All right.
Just outside Dungarvan, Coolinsmere. Tiny, tiny little place, 800 parish, and the kids' school is 100, the best school around in the town, best school in Dungarvan. And it's taken us 3 years. We've been back 5 years from the Middle East, 3 years to get a place. And the kids' education should have been out there. It's not, because it's been 3 years of delay. And we've now to look at modular housing. I heard the comment about the architect. Modular housing we're looking at from a company in Carlow is a 4-bed for 160,000, 50% less carbon and cheaper than a standard build. But the concern is the planners are going to see it and reject it because it's not standard and it doesn't look normal.
And how much did you say it was for a 4-bed?
160,000, zero carbon.
That would be brilliant, wouldn't it?
That's the amazing thing. These are being built in Carlow. You think it's an Irish innovation, full certification, 50% recycled steel, concrete on the outside if you want it. And importantly, we talk about the climate crisis. These homes are 80% less carbon than a standard build. A standard build is 50 tons for a new build. These are 10 tons and going towards zero, where we'll do solar tiles on the top of it. But the point is, that scares the hell out of a planner looking at it going, well, we've never come across this before. It happens everywhere else in the world. It happens in the UK. if we were building this in the north of Ireland, it would be 100,000 for a four-bed. Four-bed, Katie, for 100,000 built with land. The system is broken.
Yeah. But you said you came across this as in your professional life
the development, I mean, it was a flagship project down in Waterford. There was a 2,000 home development in the city, 100% renewables, community ownership. All the homes, all the social and affordable, were 220 to 230. But
that wasn't the North Quay development in Waterford City.
I was behind the North Quays as well, and that fell over for different reasons. But similarly, because we don't have homes to put jobs into, the American companies, 7,000 jobs coming to the southeast, was saying, where are the homes for the people to move into if we started tomorrow?
Was that part of the reason that North Quay fell apart?
Yeah, one of the reasons. One of the main reasons is chronic lack of housing.
I just know a little bit about that one, Rob, and I know that the locals were very, very disappointed about how that panned out.
I am local, and I was the developer behind that, Katie. So to say, my kids would have changed the future of the southeast and grew up and worked there with 7,000 jobs. It's gut wrenching.
Yeah, is it gone? Is there any way back for that?
Not with us anyway. And that's the disappointment. The Americans on the commercials that were bringing the 7,000 second media jobs are gone, and that would have gone into the whole of the southeast. So they've left. So as a result, we have to leave because our vision for it was about community ownership and community jobs rather than the new plans that are just more apartments with very little community space, more office blocks with no destination for us, because you need we purposely designed it that you had 30% open space.
Was that ever realistic though, Rob, in retrospect? Was it?
Absolutely, because if you look at what COVID has shown, if you look at every region has a chronic undersupply of housing, office and even retail. So like the southeast has got a shortage of 10 billion of investment at the moment in residential and office. Galway has about 8 billion. Cork has about 8 billion. Limerick has about 8 billion. So it's about 40 billion under supply across the country. And nobody is saying, actually, let's proactively go out, make that happen and deliver it and move people back. We have a scheme with the credit unions of relocating talent back from Dublin, where you get 15,000 relocation loan to 50,000. Because there is no government policy right now today to say, you're young, you don't need to live in Dublin, you can save 100,000, and that 100,000 is spent in the high street, which is jobs. The priority seems to be, it's 400,000 home, which prioritises the mortgage, which prioritises not saving communities in the high street, because the policies are disjoint. And that was just a micro indicator of enormous community support. I mean, there was no On Board Panola long drawn off process because 96% of the people said it's brilliant.
This is the we're talking about North Keys, are we? Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a sign of the wider opportunity of going. It was so much in demand internationally. It was in demand, and yet if you'd have said here tomorrow we need 7,000 jobs. The housing supply is only 1,000. So what, it's going to take 7 years before an American company, and this is where Ireland needs to get.
Are you really saying though, Rob, sorry, I'm just trying to, are you really saying that it was the lack of housing in the area was a key reason why people were not, why that fell apart?
No, it's one reason. One reason is the lack of housing. The second reason was tied into a university, so it's the only region that doesn't have a university. And the American company said, you have to have a university to supply us talent. And we want to start this year, so where are we moving our talent into? So that was one reason. And then the reason that it really fell apart was once you removed the commercial, the debt funding fell apart because we then had it all sold. And once America falls out, you then lose all the debt financing.
So the funding went, because I just see somebody's just, I've just got a note in here from my producer saying that Michael Walsh, who's, you'll know, is the chief executive of Waterford City and County Council. He said every opportunity was given to Falcon. That would be your company, would it?
It would have been, yeah.
Yeah, it was given to Falcon to satisfy the pre-commitment to demonstrate the money was in place to do the development, but that clearly you weren't able to do that.
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily say that in a COVID environment of raising 300 million debt financing, we had 3 months to raise it and certain conditions weren't met. We were thereabouts, and another month or two we'd have been there.
Would you? You're saying that you think you would have made it in another month or two?
Yeah, and it because the Americans were there and we were there. We were at term sheet stage, so it needed to get the binding off of commitment. So that was a matter of 2 months to get wound up. The council believed that they could do it better and faster. But I believe it's going to be a 2 to 3 year delay. The consequence of that is, okay, the bigger consequence for me, Casey, was not just the North Quays loss, it's the 7,000 jobs that were coming behind us, because that's a huge impact on any regional, the scale of the South East or Limerick or Cork. It would change the history.
It would have been transformative, yeah, for the South East, for sure.
Yeah, any regional city and therefore the catchment benefits from the community benefits from it. So it would have turned the unemployment from the worst region to being the best region. And that's my legacy behind it. It would have been the legacy behind it. But it's just not possible because the state players don't seem to play together and coordinate together, because how do you raise 300 million finance when Irish banks don't want to lend into regional Ireland? That it's just not there. So you have to find the funding from international, and the international funders will say, show us your housing supply and demand, and the figures don't stack up, namely because they see 50,000 young people and you have a supply rate of about 1,200. So to leave you to take Ireland relative to the America, the Americans introduce us to the Florida's economic development director, who's the same size catchment as Ireland.
Yeah, and very quickly, Rob, I'm out of time. Yeah. Go on, very quickly.
His statement is, we have to build 500,000 homes a year. 500,000 homes for 5 million people, because people are moving here. Ireland is only building between 10 and 15,000 because there is not the understanding yet that all of that demand for young people is still not getting out there, and it's still 10 years away before all those people are going to get home.
Okay, Rob, I'm going to have to go because I have to take one last break, but thank you for that. We'll take that break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And that's all we have time for. Today's programme was produced by Fergus Sweeney. On sound, we had Dave Gibson. Daniel Keating was our broadcast coordinator. Stand by now for Ray Darcy up next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.